Welcome to Off Mute, a podcast about women in cybersecurity.
We're Sophie,
Isabella,
and Sam,
three cyberfire streamers just beginning our careers in the government security profession.
Join us as we hear from women across government about their careers so far, the challenges they faced, and the great achievements they've made.
Hi everyone, thanks for listening. I'm joined here today by Lily. So for those that don't know, Lily is actually my manager. Lily, please can you start off by explaining a bit about your current role?
Hi everyone. So yes, I'm Lily. I work in Home Office Cybersecurity. My role is the Head of Governance, Risk and Compliance. Just a little bit about my role. So if I talk about the governance part first, so the G part of it is around ensuring that there is good cybersecurity governance in place within the Home Office, and this includes running a number of boards, forums, security working groups in the organisation. But also newly added to my team is the policy remit as well. So ensuring that there are a strong, robust set of cybersecurity policies within the Home Office and ensuring it's fully embedded within the organisation. The R side of it is the risk, and this is a big part of what I do, and in fact, currently running a project in this area to try and develop a new cybersecurity risk framework, have that rolled out across the Home Office to make sure that we can capture and assess cybersecurity risk effectively, and then be able to create the risk picture across the organisation so that management are able to make effective decisions around cybersecurity itself. So the C part of it is compliance, and that's to do with primarily audit. So it's looking at how we go out, we assess the policies, how well it's been adhered to, but at the same time, also having a focus on key cybersecurity controls, domains, where we are concerned about and trying to go out and actually effectively assess how well a lot of these things are in place. So when I say controls, it's looking at different cybersecurity measures, and there could be things like looking at vulnerability management, looking how effective it's been implementing and operating within the organization, and then coming out with a lot of recommendations or findings to try and improve a lot of these processes in the organization itself.
Thank you, Lily. I think we always have that conversation about how each part of GRC doesn't function without the other. It's very interlinked. So, Lily, how long have you been in the role, and what sort of changes have you seen since you began, either in the industry or in the role itself?
So my current role, I'm relatively new to the role, so I've been in just over a year. So I think it's been interesting for me, still very much new to the role and new to senior management itself. So a lot of challenges there. But I have worked in what I would say is probably an ID industry for over 10 years now. I think I started off in technology risk consultancy. And that was very much the beginning of what cybersecurity is at the moment. It started off around looking at technology risk in the context of business risk. I think because it was a new kind of business line in the organisation that I worked for. So it was all very emerging and new at the time. And I think since I've ended up moving to different roles, it's kind of progressed from IT security, information security, to now what we know as cybersecurity. So I think there has been quite a lot of changes. And if we think about it in the last decade or so, it's quite rapid changes within a relatively short space of time. So yeah, I think I've seen it change quite different iterations of what people perceive as cybersecurity, and I'm not really sure people still have landed on an agreed definition of it. But yeah, I've worked across all those different areas throughout my career.
And what does a typical day look like for you, Lily?
It's an interesting question. I think a day in my role, predominantly, to be honest, it comprises of a series of meetings, which, to be honest, dominates my diary every single day. So there's a lot of kind of being involved in different conversations and discussions around risk, compliance, policy, etc. But at the same time, it's also kind of understanding what we can do to improve all these different elements within the organisation itself. I think a lot of people probably think of the Home Office as one organisation. In my opinion, it's actually a combination of a lot of really small organisations. There's a lot of diversity in the way it's set up, it's structured. So when we are tackling a lot of these problems, trying to implement a lot of these processes that I'm trying to do now, there's a lot of challenges in terms of understanding how it works in different parts of the Home Office, but then almost then trying to harmonise it and to be able to provide that consistent platform to be able to assess things in the same way, but then churn out the analytics and useful information that people can use to make a decision across the organisation. So there's a lot of conversations, understanding how it works in different areas. At the same time, there's a lot of problem solving, I suppose. There's a lot of things that happen, changes and problems and incidents, etc. Although I'm not directly involved, I think do end up being partially involved in those processes, because it's, I would argue that there's all different processes in the organisation is linked to a risk. It's difficult for you to try to pull away from that. So then I always get involved in a lot of conversations and understanding, well, you know, what is the risk in this area? How are we going to try and manage it, etc.? So yes, it's a lot of meetings, a lot of conversations, a lot of problem solving. But I think the variety of it keeps it interesting for me. So I do, although it does sound like a lot of meetings back to back, it's always around different things. Keeps me on my toes, but also makes it very interesting for all those involved.
Yeah, I think we can all confirm that the Home Office is a little bit of a beast. But what inspired you to pursue a career in cybersecurity?
I don't think I always set off to want to work in cybersecurity, because like I mentioned, it was a very much a new field when I started working. Interestingly, I actually started my career trying to train as an accountant. A bit of background into that. I think I come from a family background where, you know, my parents had a really significant role in kind of shaping what I wanted to do. So they were very much involved and they were very much trying to push me into one kind of field. And I think they thought being an accountant was something that was reliable, professional. So they were trying to encourage me to do that. It's also partially because I was actually quite good at maths in school. And so I think automatically in their head, if you're good at maths, you're going to be an accountant. So I did actually end up spending the first part of my career trying to train as one. Interestingly, I joined a big audit / consultancy firm. So there were opportunities in the organisation to move into other areas. And I think there was an opportunity that came up around technology risk. And I thought that was really interesting. So I took that opportunity and moved. It was still part of a graduate programme, but it was focused on technology risk. So that's how I started in the field. I was quite lucky to work with quite a lot of really interesting and really passionate individuals about the topic. They were very techie and I think they inspired me to kind of learn more about IT, about computers, about IT security, an area that they were quite passionate about. So I think that kind of fueled me into kind of learning more about the topic, understanding a bit more and kind of develop skills in that area. And I think that then kind of helped me to move into other roles to do with IT security, predominantly to do with compliance, actually, because I think my background is more or less IT audit. I think I spent the majority of my career doing that. But I think that's helped me to build a really good general picture of IT, because I think I started off doing IT audit and looking at the IT landscape in all different types of organisations. So it gave me a good variety of how it's set up differently in different organisations. But then there was always a really small part of what I was doing that was to do with security. So looking at IT and IT general controls was what I used to do day to day. And a small subset of that is looking at security. And I always used to make me really interested that it seems quite an important area, but it was a really small part of looking at the overall IT picture. And it was always an area that seemed very technical as well, which I think was one of the reasons why it deterred a lot of people from looking into it in a lot of depth. But when I moved into industry, I think there was a lot more focus around security. But I think one of the key moments that really inspired me was working with a penetration tester within our organisation. So we recruited our own internal kind of penetration tester to help improve security in the area. And I worked quite closely with him. He is very much all in, like, technical, a very techie person. He loves trying to break things, and he's always trying to do that in the organisation that I'm working in, alongside all the other things that he was doing. And I think working with him really did inspire me, because he showed me what he was capable of doing and how easily he could do things. He also thought about the ways that it could be prevented and defended against it as well, because he was kind of always trying to break things, but at the same time, he was also trying to counteract anything that people put in place. So he spent a lot of time doing that with me, because he was almost trying to tell me, oh, well, you could defend about it by doing all these things, and then I'll just try and break it again. So it was very much working out ways that we could best improve security across the organisation. And because of all the techie things that he did, and it opened my eyes up to, wow, these things are really interesting. And the whole concept of constantly trying to kind of break something, attack something, and then at the same time working out ways that we can prevent it, defend it, I think was a really interesting concept for me, and I found it quite inspiring. So yeah, I think I'm still in touch with that person, and he very much was my mentor for that part of my career, and he taught me a lot about cybersecurity.
So you've touched on your previous work career. You previously worked in the banking sector. What was that like compared to the public sector?
It's very different. A lot of people keep asking me, is it better or is it worse? I don't think it is better or worse. I think it's just very different. And I think if you try and break it down into the key elements, I think the first thing is the whole organisational approach is just completely different. The bank is very much profit orientated. So everything is about cost, everything is about reducing cost, increasing profit, etc. I think they're very good at doing that. And it's also different because they have, well, at the time when I was at the bank, there was a lot more investment in cybersecurity, because it was recognised as something that was a key business concern. So they put a lot of emphasis and resources into the area, but everything was driven around looking at that resource cost and what benefits we get from it in comparison to the amount we're spending on it. It was very much driving the strategy that we're trying to put in place. We're trying to increase cybersecurity, but within some resourcing constraints, and what benefit does it deliver for the organisation overall. Whereas in the public sector, I would say it's a little bit different, in the sense that although there is value for money and there is a lot of focus on that, I think there's not that emphasis on profits. And so a lot of the decisions that we make doesn't necessarily kind of consider what, you know, business kind of profits that could be made from there, what kind of benefit that could be made from increasing income for the organisation. We don't really consider it that way. So I think that whole approach is slightly different. And I think the way, in that case, the decisions that you're making around cybersecurity is slightly different as well. Resourcing is also different, because the bank had a lot more funds that they could spend in that area, whereas in the public sector, we know that we have to be a lot more careful in with the money that we're spending, and we probably don't have such a big budget as they would in the banking sector, so it does limit us in terms of what we can do. So I guess we were working with some really challenging constraints in that sense. I think the other difference that's quite notable for me is when I worked in the bank, we spent a lot of time working with regulators. There was a lot of regulatory requirements, because it was a global bank I worked in. We had a really strong relationships with the regulators, but then they were quite closely involved in understanding the decisions that we were making, assessing them, challenging them. But they were also imposing a lot of internal controls that we needed to put in place to ensure they're happy with how we're operating, that we're considering all the risks involved. There is a huge emphasis on risk across the organisation, because a lot of the regulators want that assurance that you're managing your risk, you're understanding your risk very well. I think in the financial sector, there's a lot more emphasis around that. In fact, I would say that was one of the key differences working in the bank as well. We had massive risk teams. Risk was recognised as a responsibility for every single employee within the organisation. Everybody had a responsibility towards it, and it was a key pillar in their strategy, is managing their risk, understanding their risk. So there was a lot of focus in that area, and there was a lot of investment in terms of increasing the risk culture throughout the organisation. Whereas in the public sector, I find there's lots of discussion around risk, but the maturity is relatively low in a lot of different areas. I think it varies depending on where you're looking at. But overall, if I'm trying to generalise it, I would say it's comparably lower than in the banking sector, where everything is, you can link everything back to the risk, and everybody's working in whatever field in the bank would understand their link to the risk that the organisation is exposed to. So that's a lot of part of what we're doing as well. I think there's a key part of our project in trying to uplift that kind of understanding of cybersecurity risk across the organisation, and helping to organise, whether it's IT personnel or general users in the organisation, to understand cybersecurity and the risks involved there. I think that's a key part of it, where it's not as fully embedded across the organisation, certainly in the Home Office, in comparison to previous organisations I've worked with. And the final point, apologies, I'm spending a bit of time talking about this, because I think there is quite a lot of differences, is the people. It's very, very different people set up and people dynamic. I think it's quite noticeable for me, because I think there's different types of people that are attracted to banking, and I think there's different types of people that are attracted to the public sector. I think because of that, there's a lot of, the culture is completely different, and the people that I'm working with are also very different, in the sense that I find there's a lot more diversity in the public sector. There's a lot more different people from different backgrounds, and there's quite extreme differences. I've got people who have worked in the civil service for years, 10 years plus, 20 years plus, but then I've got people who are new into the public sector, coming from different backgrounds as well. I've had varying degrees of experience in the public sector, so it's quite different, and their view and their approach to the work that we do is also quite different. Whereas actually what I find in the bank is there is still diversity, but I think in terms of people's skills, backgrounds and experiences, actually is a lot more similar. I do find a lot of people in that I used to work with did come from a very similar background and experiences. It then creates, I guess, less diversity in the whole workforce, or certainly in the team that I was working with at the time. So I think it's probably, yeah, they probably need to work on that diversity element a bit more than in fact the public sector, which I think does have a good mix of different people from different areas and backgrounds. So I think, yeah, that's particularly different, which I think does make it difficult for me when I first joined to understand how people operate, because I think in that, when the people are so different as well, their approaches to work, the ways of working is also very different. And I think it took me a bit of time to understand how it works here and how I think people like to work here.
Are there any key actions that you took in order to progress to senior leadership?
It's interesting. I think it's only because I never really set out in my career to kind of move up the ladder really quickly. I am very much more focused on looking at problems, trying to solve problems, getting and doing a lot of things, and getting quite granular and detailed in the things that I do. And I enjoy doing that. It's when we look in that thing, I think you've heard me in meetings where I can get into a lot of the weeds, into the detail. And that's a big part of what I enjoy doing. And I think what I'm very conscious of quite early on in my career was that actually, as you move up the ladder, you're actually more far removed from a lot of the weeds and a lot of the kind of fixing things and doing things at the lower level. So I never really set out to kind of go, all right, I'm going to get my way to the top really quickly. I kind of progressively got there, and I think it kind of happened a little bit more organically, because as and when my skills and experience kind of increased in the different roles that I was in, what motivated my move into different roles is actually to keep things interesting for me. I want to constantly learn things, I want to do new things, and I want to be constantly learning. So whenever I feel like I'm coming to a point in my role where I feel like, okay, I've exhausted it, I'm getting bored, that's when I kind of feel like, okay, I need to make a move. And that's what tends to motivate my moves into different roles that I'm in. And I think moving into management kind of felt like a natural move for me at this point in time, because I think I did kind of exhaust a little bit of what I was doing in my previous role, because I've spent a lot of time building a lot of skills and experience in GRC, or well, predominantly around looking at audit, IT audit, cybersecurity audit. And I think I've come to a point where there was more little I could do to kind of make massive improvements or massive changes, or to kind of learn a lot more about what I was doing. So I felt like I wanted to move on to learning about something else. And I think one of the areas I've avoided a little bit, not avoided deliberately, but I think I've been focusing a lot more on the technical and the subject matter, is looking at management, I suppose, as well. That is a different kind of skill set. And I felt like that was an area that I probably haven't been exposed to a lot. Hence why when the opportunity came up for my role, I thought I'd give it a go. And it was kind of motivated from a lot of my own views about the way that I think we can do things differently and be able to organize and build a team differently. And I felt like being in a senior management role gave me the mandate to be able to do a lot of the really fundamental changes. Hence why I wanted to get into that role and put myself in a position where I can actually make some really big and concrete changes in the team that I was working in. But it's also a little bit of self-development to kind of learn a bit more about what I can do, thinking more strategically, managing things more effectively. So I think that that's what drove me to even that sort of role. So I wouldn't say I progressively kind of worked my way deliberately into a senior manager role. I think it was just more for my own kind of self-development, which is why it's pushed me towards that role. And I think what's really helped me to get there is actually the build-up of my skills and experiences in the field that I was working in. It kind of felt like I could understand it a lot better, so I could see where the problems were. I think that's how I've kind of got there, kind of organically, I suppose, rather than deliberately kind of engineering my way up there. And I have to say, it's quite different to what I expected. And like I said, it's just a completely different set of skills when you kind of reach that kind of senior management level, which I'm still learning. It's interesting, but it is very different, I suppose, to somebody who is a subject matter expert in a certain area.
Yeah, it's like you sensed our next question, Lily, because next question is, how do you continue to learn and develop in your role? What's the best way of doing so?
I think it's really different at different parts of my career. And I think since I've moved into my current role, it has had to change quite a lot. I think at the early parts of your career, I did a lot of learning on the job, learning from people I worked with, also and the combination of doing a lot of training courses, professional training, etc. I spent a good part of my career kind of focusing on those elements of learning, or those ways of learning. And I think now that I've moved into a more kind of more strategic role, I think it has changed a little bit, because it's not so much learning about, like I said, subject matter or professional development in the sense of cybersecurity details and understanding a lot more of the technicality behind it. It's almost taking a step back and thinking about the bigger picture. And that takes a different kind of learning to be able to understand, because I think it's very different for different organisations in terms of what their strategic approaches, what their objectives are. I think there's a lot of things that you could learn from being part of senior management conversations, understanding a lot more about their perspectives. But there's a lot more about developing kind of soft skills, I suppose, that are not more technical skills, but things about understanding how that fits into the wider organisation and how what you do in your area can benefit the overall organisational picture. So it's talking to people a lot more, what I find has been most beneficial, and going out and being able to share knowledges and experiences with other professionals, I think has actually been really beneficial for me. And it's bringing together a lot of problems that we are aware of, but perhaps we haven't quite been able to even find the ultimate solution or be able to navigate our way to the solution has been a challenge for me. And I think having a lot of discussions externally with other people has been helpful. And there's a lot of forums now that you're able to do that, to be able to do that knowledge sharing with the wider industry. I think that's actually been more beneficial than actually, say, for example, sitting a training course, which I've probably done a lot less of since I've come into my current role. But I think it's actually going out, understanding a bit more, but also understanding the people side of things as well, and understanding how you can manage people effectively, how you can actually bring the best out in people is something that I've put a bit more focus into understanding a bit more.
Yeah, definitely. I think at the start of your career, it's important to do those sort of courses and get those certifications as sort of your base knowledge. Then as you progress, it's from learning through other people.
So, Lily, what strengths do you think are important for women with senior management aspirations?
I think there are a number of things that women can consider. I think it's difficult to say specific to women itself, because I think these things probably apply to anyone, I guess, who have senior management aspirations. But I think one of the more challenging things for women is kind of trying to break that glass in terms of operating in a very male-dominated environment, because what I found was challenging in my career is working with a lot of kind of similar characters, I suppose, and backgrounds that were quite different to mine, and trying to understand a little bit more their points of views and what motivates them, and also what influences them as well. I think women tend to be a bit better at kind of reading people, understanding people, and being able to communicate effectively with people as well. I think that's what I think, in my experience anyway, women tend to be a bit stronger on, but then they don't tend to utilise it as well as men do. Not to say that men don't have similar qualities as well, but I think they just are able to do it and use it more effectively, whereas women, I think, have a lot of considerations. I think they see a lot of complexity in things, and also in my case, speaking from my personal experience, it's also having that confidence as well. Women tend to be, or certainly from my perspective, I tend to kind of think twice a lot of the time and second guess a lot of the views that I may have. So when I'm in that kind of environment where I'm trying to maybe present a view or maybe push forward an argument or something, I do have to kind of almost kind of challenge it myself in my head first, and almost trying to criticize myself to try and work out what potential questions are happening before I would actually portray that. Whereas I find for other people, and particularly men, I think they're just more happy and more comfortable in being able to just communicate what their thoughts and views are, and trying to kind of push their agenda a lot better. So I think those are one of the things I've learned as part of being in a senior management team is kind of trying to portray your view better and being a lot more assertive, but also kind of confident in your perspective and points of view as well, which I had to work on a long time actually to try and do that better. Whereas I find in a lot of cases, certainly a lot of team members I work with, it just comes a lot more naturally to them. So yeah, I think it's building that confidence, and for me, in my experience as well, is being able to do that based on what I know and what I've done and learned and what I've seen in the past has been helpful for me. So I guess be trying a lot more things and exposing yourself into different types of scenarios and environments, I guess, gives you that confidence that you can kind of build upon to then be able to push your points of views. So I think, yeah, trying a lot more things, experiencing a lot more things, having that, and then building your confidence that way is how I approached it.
Yeah, truthfully, I recognise so much of myself in what you were saying there about having the confidence to do that. Now, as a mother, how do you manage that sort of work-life balance?
It's hard, I'll be honest. It's very hard. The job that I'm currently in, I personally think is quite high-pressure, quite fast-paced, and there's quite a lot of time commitment towards it. And because of the way that I feel quite passionate about my subject, I genuinely want to kind of build something, do something, and I'm investing a lot of time and effort thinking about it and trying to solve a number of problems that come my way. But then trying to balance that with also, to be honest with you, even more challenging problems that I have from my kids. So I have two kids, a boy and a girl, and they both pose really difficult challenges for me at different points of their lives. I think people always say they get older and it gets easier. Personally, I don't think it does. I think the challenges just change from something that's a lot more basic, you know, keeping them alive, making sure they're fed, etc. And it moves to a lot more challenging difficulties in managing, you know, their more education, the way that they socially interact with other children, and a lot more other different kind of challenges that comes their way. For me, it's kind of trying to be very, very well organised. There's a diary that I have from work. There's a diary that my kids have, each have one respectively. And then mine, which to be honest with you, tends to be the one that gets deprioritized right at the bottom of the stack. I'm making sure that the other diaries are maintained. So I make sure that I allocate enough time to engage in all the activities that I need to do as a mother, which can be almost a job in itself. And then making sure there's a strict kind of boundaries in terms of when I do the home life and home issues and things to do with my children, and then things that I do at work as well. Being disciplined to do that is hard because, like I said, quite passionate about what I do, so then I want to do a lot of things. But at the same time, I fully understand that responsibilities at home are also really important to me. So being organised helps so that I can fit everything that I need to do in, but then also being disciplined and making sure that I do follow my plan and follow the diary is also very hard. But I think I'm getting better, I would like to say. I'm trying to refine, but I think it's all part of learning as well. And I'm hoping it will get better in time, but still something I'm very much learning at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, Lily, I've seen your work calendar, let alone all your multiple personal ones as well. Have you modelled your own leadership style or behaviour on a former leader of yours? And if so, what was the style of behaviour that you now use?
There is one person I've actually managed to be quite early on in my career. So my first move away from tech risk consultancy was into industry. And I was actually managed by a woman, and it was a very insightful experience for me because it was completely different to how I was managed by previous male managers in the past. I think it's because she has been through a really interesting experience because she's older than me and she's been in IT industry a lot longer. And so she's been operating pretty much her entire career in a very, very male-dominated environment where she is always the only woman that's there, and also she's trying to do a lot of things to kind of operate with all these different individuals who were very differently to her, but also trying to put her a lot of her views across. And she's always had a challenge of trying to do that, and I think she shared a lot of experience with me and how she managed that, and I think that's inspired me quite a lot, helping me to understand how I can communicate a lot of my views and thoughts better. But at the same time, what she also shared with me was a lot more empathy and understanding of the challenges that you have as a woman as well. I think from things like, you know, home life, she has children of her own as well. I think she has a good understanding of what challenges women experience there. But I think for me, one of the things is, so I was pregnant whilst she was my manager. And I think the challenges that you experience through that process, I think for me as well, it was particularly challenging because I had a number of health issues. It was really hard for me to kind of balance that and also manage my work at the same time. But she was very supportive, very understanding, very open to discuss the challenges and the issues, which, I'll be honest, I was eternally grateful for, because it was a really difficult time in my life, but I felt she always understood me and understood what I was experiencing, and she's experienced similar things herself, so I think it was easier for me to kind of open up and share it with her, whereas I'm not entirely sure it would have been similar with a male manager who perhaps wouldn't be as, I wouldn't say that they're not understanding, but I guess they wouldn't have had their own experience in that area. So I think it came to a point where I, you know, there were certain health, let's just say, challenges during pregnancy, which is a little bit embarrassing, but I was very comfortable sharing that with her, being able to talk about it, and she would be thinking about ways that I could manage it better and sharing her experience as well. So I'm really grateful that she managed me during that period of time, but also prepare me for my return to work, which also was really, really challenging for me. I think I experienced quite a lot of guilt when I was returning to the workplace after my pregnancy, but she fully understood that, gave me a lot of support and gave me a lot of things that I needed to think about to make sure that I'm comfortable to return to the workplace, and also give me a lot of flexibility as well to be able to manage that difficult time for me. So I think she really inspired me and made me realise that actually you can be a mother and you can also be working, a working mother, which is what she demonstrated. And I think for her,
it was, especially her generation, it was not as common. I think a lot of the friends that she had probably were not fully working mothers. They were part-time working mothers. I think that was quite common as well, but not full-time working mother, which is, certainly from my experience, very difficult. And she inspired me because she was able to do it very well and manage both her home and work life very well. She was successful in her career, and in fact, throughout the time I've known her, she's kind of progressed into more senior roles, and at the same time, balancing that home life as well. She's got two children, which I know very well, and are now very much grown-ups, and they're very, very mature and sensible children. And I always feel like that's inspired me to think, right, that's somebody that's able to do that. It's not easy, but she was always able to give me views and support for that, and it made me think, okay, I can do it too.
Yeah, she sounds great. What's the best professional advice you've ever received?
There's a couple. I've got quite a lot of professional advice, some by the manager that I previously spoke about as well. From her, she always tried to encourage me to kind of come out of my comfort zone. I was always very good at like looking at a complex problem, trying to work things out, doing a lot of calculations, trying to understand what potentially could be solutions. But what I probably wasn't as good at was being able to kind of push that in a manner that would be involving influencing a number of different stakeholders. And I think she kind of saw that in me quite early on in my career, and she kind of mentioned that, like, there are ways that you can do this better, and in fact there's a ways of doing this more effectively so that the outcome will be beneficial for all those involved, and actually it would be a better overall outcome as well. And she spent a lot of time encouraging me to do that, and even granular things like being able to attend certain meetings and be able to kind of portray my thoughts. I tend to be the last person that kind of puts forward a view, because I'm very much a listener. I like to listen, absorb, and I think I process a lot of information, and then I'll come out with my end view or solution. Whereas I think in a lot of meetings, different kind of problem solving situations I'm in, people like to kind of throw a lot of views out there to kind of work together to get towards the end point. And I think one thing that she did mention to me that was worth considering is, you know, there's probably a journey that you need to take people on as part of understanding your thought process of how you got to that end solution, rather than kind of portraying something right at the very end so that they're not really sure how you've come up with that, and they're not really sure your thought process in coming up to that end point. But taking them through that journey of how you are evolving something or how you're moving something towards that correct direction. So she gave me a lot of advice about that, which I thought was really helpful, because I think I did find at some point, I think, oh, I know what the answer is, and I'll people would just look at me a bit blind, like, oh, well, you know, have you considered this? How have you got there? And so I think that's been really helpful for me. So I think taking myself out of my comfort zone to be able to try these things and try and communicate differently, try to kind of adjust the way that I communicate to different people, was really challenging for me. I spent a lot of time learning about that. She did coach me quite a lot on that. And so I think that really helped me. And I think through being able to kind of do that as well made me realise that actually, when you do that, you do learn something new, and you then develop yourself to then kind of move forward to another level. So I do encourage people to kind of try different things, you know, that maybe they're not entirely comfortable with, but don't go crazy and like kind of jump into the deep end. Maybe take some small steps with some guidance, perhaps, to kind of take yourself out of that comfort zone and try something different. I think that would be really helpful.
Lily, we always like to wrap up the podcast with a recommendation. Can you recommend any books, TV programs, podcasts that you've been listening to? Can be cybersecurity related or just something that you're simply enjoying?
So the recommendation I have, which is very personal to me, is something called Crying in H-Mark. I don't know whether anybody's heard of that book. I think it's written by Michelle Zauner. So it's a book about an American Korean, she's a musician, and is a little bit of a memoir that she'd written about her experiences. And the reason why I really like it is because a lot of the themes in her book really resonated with me. I think we come from kind of like a kind of mixed heritage kind of background, and she shares a lot of experiences being the only Korean person in an American school as she grew up, and she talked a lot about the experiences there. She also talked about quite in depth her experience with her mother, who is she had cancer, and that's also an experience I share with her as well, because that's something I've been through, which I'll be honest was really impactful in my life. Different ways to her, but I think we both can resonate with how much it's affected the way we are and shaped our personality and experience and our character as well. So I can resonate with that quite deeply. So yeah, that's my recommendation.
Thank you for listening to Off Mute, with a special thanks to today's guest, Lily. This episode was hosted by Sophie,
produced by Isabella,
and written by Sam.